Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.
It is a pleasure now to welcome our last guest of the day and our next guest for the very first time, Margaret Connolly. Now, Margaret's a tax expert. These days she's an independent tax expert, having worked for many years in many big accounting firms. Margaret, welcome to the Business Bunker Show. It's an absolute pleasure to meet you. We're going to talk about the work that you do, but I know that you also do a lot of stuff outside of work in terms of running around like a mad thing, and we're going to talk a little bit about that in a minute. But just start off by giving us a background to you. If you would.
All right. First of all, I'd like to say thank you very much for inviting me onto the show. Folks, it's an absolute pleasure.
Clearly a local lass.
Yes, very.
Well, I've got to tell you, sorry to interrupt so early into this. You might guess where Margaret's origins are in Forsyth, round about Stirling. Yeah. And she has just been asked to represent England.
In an international marathon. Yeah. Which I will do with great pride, the 8th of October this year. It's part of the Chester Marathon, and I'm part of one of the I'm representing England in the Masters Marathon team.
Cool.
And Masters basically means people over the age of 35.
So we're assuming Nicola's got her on a blacklist now.
Yeah,
for that.
I hope so.
sorry to interrupt that. So do start again, Margaret. Tell us a bit about your background, because somebody asked me about you, and I said this lady has basically memorized all 12,000 pages of the tax code and has them in her head because she's got a brain like a planet.
You're
a bit of a tax specialist, really, aren't you?
I'm afraid I am, Paul. And I was born in Stirling in Scotland, and I grew up in a small town, Kilsyth, and then I went to Glasgow University and done a maths degree, and I loved maths. I didn't know what to do.
But you did a degree in pure maths?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then I wasn't sure what to do, but I always really wanted to come to London, so I decided I would try and get into the London School of Economics to do a postgrad, and it was I didn't know whether to do law or accounting and finance, and I ended up doing accounting and finance. Loved London. I met some amazing people at the LSE from all over the world. That was just fabulous.
This will make you laugh, yeah, because my highest qualification in life is 50 yards breaststroke, at which I cheated to get it because I had one foot on the floor. But I'm actually a guest lecturer at the LSE on the MBA program.
Oh, right, wow.
I just thought I'd let you know how standards have slipped since your day. I'll just say that basically.
Oh, yes. I qualified as a chartered accountant, so I'm a fellow of the Institute of Chartered Accountants in England and Wales. I trained with PricewaterhouseCoopers in London, and I spent 20 years overall in the city. I had an absolutely amazing time. I worked with probably some of the brightest brains in the profession. Spent 3 years as head of domestic tax at Unilever, and that was brilliant, being able to stand in the shoes of the client, and it got me to realise that I could actually stand up and face the revenue, and I still prefer face-to-face meetings today with the revenue than anything else, you know. I then went to KPMG again. I worked with some phenomenal people there, but we had moved. I'd got married and we'd moved to Kent, and I'd got myself a few horses. I used to get up at 4 in the morning to ride before jumping on the train. And then I decided to move local. So early 2002, I took a partnership with a firm. They're now called Crest and Reeves. So I was a tax partner and head of tax there for 13 years. Most of the work I was doing, increasingly, it was amazing working in Kent, because whilst being in the city, I was dealing with a lot of big multinationals and doing a fair amount of cross-border international tax planning, which, for the avoidance of doubt, in my world, does not mean avoiding tax. It means making sure you're not paying it in more than one country.
I want to talk about this in a minute, because there's nothing more guaranteed to drive me nuts than some of the complete nonsense in the press about tax. But we'll come back. Don't let me interrupt, but I'm going to have a rant in a minute, don't worry.
I moved to Kent early 2002, and much to my surprise, I mean, I got involved with some real pure quality clients in Kent, some fairly big chunky Kent companies, mostly owner managed businesses. I do particularly enjoy advising that sort of company, being involved with the family and issues like succession planning or partitions, you know, even mergers with other businesses, there's quite a lot of synergies. But I realised over the years that what I was enjoying more than anything, because you may have worked out, I actually quite like talking. And I don't. So I'm now independent. I'm Margaret Connolly Tax and Business Consulting Limited. So I probably do 50% tax, 50% strategic advice to mostly family businesses. I don't have a website. I don't have business cards. I don't know how to do Twitter. What I do know how to do is have face-to-face meetings. I'm good. I'm fairly good. I can think on my feet. I can have ideas. I detest admin. I can't type to save myself. So I've got a virtual secretary. She's formerly KPMG. And as soon as I finish a meeting, I can dictate onto my phone and send it to her. And she probably takes 1 hour to do what it would take me 10 hours. But anyway, clients don't pay me to type or to make notes or to do all this admin, yeah. You know. So I stick. I only work part-time now. I retired from my position at Reeves at the end of December 2014. Because I'd always wanted to get involved in more than just the tax, i.e. the strategy. So that's what I tend to do now, and I stick to the face-to-face meetings, having the ideas, getting someone to put the ideas together, and occasionally taking second opinions. I do have, obviously, some connections, some alliances with other organisations. For example, sometimes I'm involved at the moment. I've got three fairly large, well-known Kent companies where I am the strategic advisor to. If clients do want other advice, like audits, then I've got close links with a really good firm of auditors, accountants in Canterbury. If they want accounting and R&D, I've got good links with RIFT. I've just got various links, and I do find it works quite well for me, because an awful lot, when you're in a firm of accountants, clients will sometimes be suspicious and think that, okay, you're doing tax, but they think, oh, you've probably got targets to sell other services, you know.
Sure.
But I just prefer to do my own thing and to work for myself, because I don't do timesheets, and I don't have to work out, charge my time by the hour. I really do enjoy what I do still. It's all I've ever done. To me, tax is fun.
Because there's that old joke about consultants. I used to be a management consultant, so it was the same kind of thing. There's that old joke about consultants. You know, consultant dies and goes to heaven and is met by St. Peter, and he's going, oh, you've arrived eventually. Now you're 467. He's gone, I'm not. I'm 83. He's not according to your timesheets. You're not.
Oh, it's just the more internal admin. But I guess I can fully appreciate that, you know, firms with lots of staff have to do it to keep tabs on people and clients and what's been done. But I just like the freedom of being me, you know, and doing what I want to do and doing the strategy. And I do spend a lot of time with them. One of the things I think I've always loved doing is you get contacted. Somebody has maybe recommended me, and you get in there and they say, oh, we want to implement a share option scheme because they've heard about it, they've read about it. And you know, it would be so easy just to think, oh, yeah, okay, let me tell you how much time I might spend doing this and advising them. But I will tend to invest a lot more time in finding out, is that really what they want to do?
Yeah, exactly.
Talking, why do you want to do it? Finding out, having individual face-to-face meetings with different shareholders, because invariably they've got different aspirations, different ambitions. They've got different succession issues. They're not the same age. And so you may even have a company, there'll be four shareholders, and they'll think, oh, we want to sell. But sit them all down one by one and think, get them to check, well, what are you going to do once you sell? What are you going to do? And often it will be, somebody has mentioned it would be a good idea to sell at the moment because they can take advantage of entrepreneurs' relief and pay capital gains tax at 10%. And you think, yeah, well, fine, but what have you thought about what you're going to do after it? Have you thought about if you've got shares in a trading company, if anything unforeseen happens and you die, they may be exempt from inheritance tax as a business asset. If you convert them into cash, et cetera, they won't be. So you need to give
that's
them
the eyes glaze over.
Yeah,
you just tell us what to do.
Yeah.
Tell us.
But you've got to really make sure.
That's where I want to come in as a businessman, and some of the things that drive me nuts when people that know nothing about it start telling you about tax and about who isn't paying what. The thing that drives me biggest nut, you don't have to comment on this because this is libelous what I'm about to say. There's a certain newspaper group, the Daily Mail, okay, that has a habit of printing the same thing over and over again. And considering their tax affairs aren't exactly, you know, what they're claiming to be, they ought not to do this, but they do it, and it drives me nuts every time. when people start talking about tax avoidance, it's always avoidance, it's never evasion, because that's a criminal activity. Uh-huh. Yeah. When they start talking about big corporation tax avoidance, and I'm no apologist for big corporations, but this does drive me nuts, they'll always put XYZ, Amazon or whatever, had revenues of 80 billion. You do not pay corporation tax on revenues. You pay it on profit. And until you start to recognise that, yeah, it's meaningless. It is just, it's just the media winding people up. Because once you start to understand that it's paid on a profit, you then start to understand how and why they pay the tax they do or don't. Yeah. And that's not to say that there aren't some ways of moving stuff around, and we got into a whole thing about transfer pricing and stuff like that within the European Union that people were doing various coffee shops and what have you. But on the whole, with international companies, international law, I think I'm right in this, says you can't pay tax in two jurisdictions. You have to pay tax in one. The fact that they don't pay it here doesn't mean to say they don't pay it somewhere. Yeah. Anyway, rant over. Sorry about that. I had to get that off my chest. Yeah.
It is a whole minefield, the tax now, and even, you know, the leading up to the election last week, there was all this great big hullabaloo about the UK was now paying, you know, the rates of corporation tax were similar to those in tax haven countries. Mm. And yeah, well, that says maybe, and that's right. But, you know, the background to that was several years ago when Ireland really reduced its headline rate of corporation tax.
12%, yeah.
An awful lot of UK businesses were either moving their manufacturing operations over to Ireland, so there was a loss of jobs. So there was a lot of pressure put on the UK government then to bring them down. But if you look more closely, the headline rate of corporation tax, yeah, it has fallen, but the other allowances and offsets, like the rates of capital allowances, they've got a much lesser. And if you actually sat with two lots of numbers and done the detailed arithmetical calculations, when we were 32% as against 20, okay, it is a bit low overall, but it's not a glaring 12%. So
the interesting thing was when they last lowered the corporation tax rate, they actually generated more in revenue, more in tax revenue from a lower rate. Uh-huh, mm-hmm. You know, just because. It's not as simple as, because it's so, our tax system is so complex. Margaret, how many pages are there in the tax code at the moment, roughly?
I've lost count, Paul. Yeah. I've lost count. It's just, I really have to be keeping so up to date. Now, there's so much anti-avoidance as well. You know, I was dealing with one of my clients last week, and innocently he was about to try and prop up one of his subsidiaries. He was going to put a huge loan of his own personal funds in, and I'm thinking, actually, if it ends up irrecoverable and it's written off, that could trigger a 19% corporation tax in the company. And he may, if he's lucky, get a capital loss, but he's got nothing to offset it with, you know. Mm-hmm. So my job, I've never actually advised on any tax avoidance schemes. I'm pleased to say in a 35-year career, up till today, I've never had anything that the revenue have not accepted, because I'm in the business. Well, I want to sleep at night, and I work on the assumption that my clients want to sleep at night. Mm. And I don't want to ever go selling a client and saying I'll charge a percentage, because, you know, to me, for me, it doesn't sit comfortably. Yeah. But there's so much change going on in the world of tax now, and even like all the non-domiciliaries. I mean, one of the a couple of excellent chaps in the firm in Canterbury that I'm this Mike. It tends to do with a lot of non-domiciliaries, and they announced last year there was going to be an awful lot of changes, and so clients are trying to amend their affairs. And then because of Brexit and the announcement of the snap election, they pulled all this legislation that was expected to go through this year. So it keeps everybody on their toes, you know. But you get a lot of it's almost like you know it's not really you don't really want to tell many people that, you know, you're a tax advisor these days, because I don't think people have got a very high opinion of it.
No, they haven't. And that's one of the things that I find so disappointing in the overall thing. I mean, for me, I'm perfect. I don't even have an ISA. She'll punch me. I don't even have an ISA, yeah? And I've never had an ISA, yeah? Don't look at me like that.
I look at you, however, it's radio.
I couldn't care less. I just...
Actually, if it's any consolation, neither have I.
Yeah. Good. I believe we should pay the tax that's due. Uh-huh. Yeah, and as a society, we can't fund anything if we don't pay our taxes, and it's as simple as that. It, you know, that's what we're all here to do. Unfortunately, the politicians have made the tax code so horrifically complex that it isn't. it isn't even that you're trying to avoid things. Mm. It's you're trying to get it right. You're trying to work out what on earth to do in terms of how you do it. You know, I owned a small company that had flat rate VAT. Mm. Yeah. And everybody's going, oh, that's lovely. And all of a sudden, everyone went, oh, no, you don't want to do that. You know, why? Well, because they've changed this, this, and this. And you look at it, and you're losing loads and loads of money because it changed one week from the next. Mm. You know, just
it
simple stuff.
So common. I mean, I have never, ever worked with a firm of accountants, or I've never worked with anybody that they've been trying to avoid, they've been advising clients to, I would call it tax dodging or tax skullduggery.
Yeah.
I have never actually personally known anyone that's been in that business.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, people, I think it's just due to ignorance or lack of understanding or lack of awareness, whatever. They don't appreciate, you know, the world of the tax advisor. Yeah, there are a minority out there that are flogging tax avoidance schemes, you know, and they don't have a much understanding of tax.
Mm.
But our paths don't tend to meet. You know, firms of chartered accountancy are so regulated.
Yeah, absolutely.
They don't tend to get involved in that sort of stuff, you know, and that's, you know, as I said earlier, you know, I want to sleep at night, you know, and we've got to be whiter and white with the revenue ourselves and any accountants and tax advisors. So, I love what I do, and, I've got hobbies and stuff.
Well, we're very fast running out of time, Margaret, and I just want you to tell us about that, because that fascinates me as well. You know, the world of tax is a very cerebral, complex, and you're a very knowledgeable lady on that. Uh-huh. And then at the weekend, you go running for miles.
I run most days. Well, I was a horse rider for years, Paul, but my big horse, Jock.
How did she think of a name like that?
After Jock's, Dallas fan.
lots of little nephews that supported Glasgow Celtic, and there was this great manager.
Jock Wallace.
Jock Steen.
Oh, Jock Steen.
So my horse, I'm afraid, is called after Jock Steen. I have another horse called William Wallace, yes. But so I had to retire. I also had one called Jimmy Boyle.
Hold on a minute. They've let her represent England. How did that happen?
Because I'm resident and domiciled in England and Wales. Even that's how my will starts as well. No, I've been here for 38 years. I run with an English club, South Kent Harriers. Hi there, South Kent Harriers. And I got into running when I had to give up horse riding just as a bit of exercise. And I was not, let's just say, I'm not bad for my age. I do like it. I never get tired. I never get sore legs. So I got into doing marathons 2 years ago, done three last year, and got a 356 at Chester, and got an email that I had been selected to run for England, and I genuinely thought it was a joke, but it was serious. But it'll be a real honour and a real privilege, you know. And yes, I live here, I've always worked here, I've always paid my taxes in England.
and she hasn't got an ISA either.
And I haven't got an ISA. And so I'd sooner, I'm afraid to say, I feel as if I should run for England, and it'll be a pleasure to run for England rather than Scotland. But yeah, and I'm glad. I'm not really in a great fan of this referendum to have devolution. And I think if anything positive did come out of last week's result, I think maybe the Scottish Nationalists may sort of hold their horses on that one. So.
Sure.
So that might be good.
Their horse is called Jock.
And their horse is called Jock. William Wallace, and Rabbi Burns. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Margaret, thank you. It's an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunker Show. We ought to say, because we didn't let her in as punishment for being late.
I don't think we get a word anyway.
Yeah,
no.
we've got a very short amount of time. But thank you to Annette Byrne of Rift Accounting for introducing us to Margaret. You work closely with Margaret,
we do, don't we? Yeah. We do, and we have great fun doing so.
I have great fun doing so.
We certainly do.
Just give us a quick 30 seconds on where we are with Rift, what you're up to, how's it going, update.
Rift continues to be really, really busy, growing fast. Mm. We've got loads going on. We've obviously got the Kiba dinner next week.
Oh, I'm so excited,
Margaret.
Evening dinners.
You're up for an award, aren't you?
We're presenting an award. We sponsor one of the awards, so we've got the Kiba dinner next Thursday. That's one of our annual trips Margaret? We enjoy that one. So that's really good. Looking forward to that, because it's so many great businesses in the room that night. We always have a great fun evening, and it's great to see new businesses entering the awards and winning, and we've got some customers that are also up for awards, so looking forward to that. Apart from that, it's all very much business as usual. I love introducing my clients to Margaret because
you always bring us fascinating guests.
I do. I bring you a real variety, but I didn't know she had a William Wallace horse, so we'll discuss that again.
Hasn't everyone?
No, apparently not. I have got an ISA, just for the record. I'll be the one off.
Well, it's her then.
It's me. I am the only one. But I'm not old enough to have, was it the PEP before?
Oh, the PEP.
ISA.
Oh, PEP.
There we go.
Yeah,
showing your age. Yeah, imagine that. No, but all good, thank you. And I've got a great guest for you again next month.
Have you?
I'll tell you about
you
it.
You get surpass yourself.
Every month. Every month.
Blimey.
I surpass myself.
Nettie, thank you so much
for
that. Sorry to restrict you. We had a busy show today.
To
Margaret. Just
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.